This is the Education Gadfly Show.
What are you going as, Chuck?
I'm just going as me. Mm-hmm. Papa, we call me in the Finn family.
Yes. You know, you can get Checker Finn costumes online now.
You can. They're cheap.
Now, here's your host, Mike Petrilli.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli, at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me in welcoming my co-host, the San Francisco Giants of Education Policy, Checker Finn.
Wow. Thank you very much. I haven't been a football player in a while.
I know. I broke the cardinal rule of using a sports reference with Checker, right up there with using a pop culture reference. Now, the San Francisco Giants, who won the World Series and actually won seven straight games, first in the National League Championship and then in the World Series. Pretty impressive display of power there from our city and on the left coast.
Well, it's better that they're succeeding in something.
Yes. Now, I was tempted to call you the Hurricane Sandy of the education policy world, but
that's too painful. That's too close.
That is too close and too painful. And in fact, you know, the other day I said made an allusion to the teachers' unions being as strong as Hurricane Sandy, and several people thought that found that offensive. And I have to say, I probably should not have and would not have made that comparison that I did before the storm if I knew how bad the storm was going to be.
On the other hand, let's acknowledge that status quo people are way too sensitive about terminology. Every time I suggest that we blow up the existing education system, I am accused of wanting to kill children with explosives.
Yes.
As opposed to overturning the status quo. I think a hurricane blowing through the status quo would be equally appealing.
And the funny thing is there actually are people on the other side of this debate, opponents of school reform, who actually did spend some time in the 1960s blowing up buildings.
And it's so, true. Yeah. Now they're part of the establishment.
All right. Okay. Lots to talk about. Week before the election. Ty, let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
Indiana Schools Chief Tony Bennett has come under fire from conservatives for backing the Common Core. Can conservative policymakers and public officials support national standards and expect to keep their jobs?
Sure. Bennett's probably going to win big time next Tuesday and keep his job. That'd be my hunch. All kinds of conservatives are in favor of the Common Core. Tony Bennett's a swell example, and Jeb Bush is another. I think Lamar Alexander is a third, but I might even be a fourth. But there's this tiny band of kind of nonstop Common Core critics who don't amount to much, but are trying, much like the Wizard of Oz, to make themselves look powerful and influential. And they have a little traction in a few places. But I've come to believe that states that want out of the Common Core should just get out of the Common Core and stop fussing.
You know, Checker, I wonder, do you think this is going to change after the election? I mean, we've seen more recently a lot of people talking about the Obama Core, kind of like Obamacare, turning this into a partisan issue. Let's say, first of all, imagine if Romney ended up winning and suddenly this question about Obama forcing states to adopt the Common Core, I mean, that argument would go away. I mean, would that
sure,
settle
would.
Down?
Things it, would. It would. And states that believe in doing it on the merits would do it. And a few states will back away. And that's just fine. 46 states are not in any case going to take it seriously.
Okay, topic number two.
Charter school critics are outraged that the principal of a failing Florida charter school received a $519,000 departure payment. How can charter advocates prevent the inevitable backlash against the model caused by such incidents?
Well, you know, we should say, of course, that there are some high-profile examples of district superintendents getting big bailouts. There was the Arlene Ackerman case in Philly where she got close to $1 million and then filed for unemployment. So this is not just charter schools. But Chuck, I think the larger issue is that you have news stories coming out about charter schools making what seem to be boneheaded decisions, either the school, their board, their authorizer. And the traditional public sector way we respond to this is by coming up with new laws and regulations to keep it from happening again. That's kind of anathema to charter schools. So do we just have to accept that this has, you know, people are going to make bad decisions in charters and that's just part of the model?
You got to get the balance right between freedom and regulation. This is true in Wall Street, where some people made boneheaded decisions. It's true in the district sector, public education. It's true just about everywhere. And I don't think a single state has got the balance right between freedom and regulation for its charter schools. I think we have to accept the fact that 5,000 plus charter schools, each with a fair degree of autonomy, are going to make a few dozen stupid decisions every year among them. Some of them will have to do with uses of money. Some of them will have to do with misguided field trips. Others will have to do with really badly chosen book decisions and so forth and so on. Freedom brings folly. Overregulation is a mistake. Getting this balance right, I know this sounds obvious, but it needs a lot more work than it's been getting.
So how do you make the case, though, Checker? I mean, if let's say some lawmakers wanted to respond to this by putting new regulations in and micromanaging, how do you make the case to a lawmaker to say, hey, hold your fire, don't, you know, the answer here is not to re-regulate?
I'm mindful of Governor Chris Christie, whom I admire, trying to put a cap on how much superintendents of district schools in New Jersey could get paid because he thought it was just outrageous that some of them were getting paid as much as they were getting. So a non-regulator conservative governor was going to regulate on what districts can pay their superintendents. I can't fault him for the impulse. Some districts radically overpay some people, though that's not the norm. I think you have to say to a legislator, allow a few mistakes to be made as long as they don't endanger life or limb, and hold your fire. But I also know that legislators wanting to pass, let's call it the Petrilli Law in Tennessee, are going to make their name by cracking down on costly buyouts in the charter sector.
Okay, topic number three.
The 2010 election brought in a wave of Republican state lawmakers who have pushed an aggressive agenda, including on education reform. Yet no one's talking about a backlash against these state legislators. What does that say about school reform's political viability?
I mean, so here's the question, Checker. You've got, in a lot of states, you had these super majorities of Republicans come in and pushed a very strong agenda, vouchers, anti-collective bargaining, tenure reform, all kinds of things that would stir the hornet's nest of the unions and other people. And yet, we're not hearing talk about this being another wave election in the other direction, where a lot of those Tea Party or Republican legislators are going to get kicked out of office. Now, maybe a week from now, we'll say, oh, well, we all missed the story and it happened. But, I mean, does this just say that these reforms are not as unpopular as sometimes they are pointed out to be, or as politically dangerous as they're pointed out to be?
We may be missing the story. If I were a SEBI teachers union, and we have a terrific new report on teacher union strength just out at Fordham, I wouldn't be publicizing whom I've targeted for extinction in the legislature. And there's plenty of backlash going on. There's a backlash in Idaho right now regarding something that Republican legislators did in education. There was a successful backlash 2 years ago in Ohio. There was a close to successful one in Wisconsin. It may not be in the targeting of individuals for extinction, though I suspect there's more of that going on than we know. But there's plenty of backlash and pushback.
All right. Well, we will we'll check in on this issue again after the election. All right. That is all the time we've got for Pardon the Gadfly. Now it's time for everyone's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. Amber, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Mike.
You know, we are taping this on Wednesday, which is Halloween. And what are you dressed as here, Amber?
Well, it's my 2 second run out the door outfit of a cook. Or a baker, just an apron and flour. Uh-huh. And I actually did carry a frying pan in my bag today.
Nice. And she's got some flour on her cheeks.
Yes.
The frying pan, which could be helpful in the metro if there was any kind of incident.
Yes, any incident.
She's not fat enough. All
you
those TV
it.
Cooks are fat.
Yeah, so.
Thank you, Checker. Anyway. What are you going as, Checker?
I'm just going as me. Papa, we call me in the Finn family.
Yeah. Yes. You know, you can get Checker Finn costumes online now.
It's, you can. They're cheap.
Not so bad. And I of course, am going as Darth Vader. People around here, they always talk about, you know, Checker being the sort of bad cop. I'm the good cop. I'm trying to toughen up my reputation here.
Yes. It's working for you.
And I'm bringing in my light sword.
Saber.
Sorry, Saber. World Series is
tried.
About baseball?
All right, Amber, what you got for us this week?
All right, we got a big new Fordham study to talk about. It's been 3 years in the making, not that anyone was counting, called How Strong Are U.S. Teacher Unions? A State-by-State Comparison. The study seeks to uncover both visible and invisible indicators of union strength and how this power can manifest itself in terms of things that matter to schools, districts, and students. We analyze 5 big areas real quickly. Resources and membership, which includes things like members and revenue and K-12 spending, involvement in politics or teacher union union's share of financial contributions to state candidates and political parties, scope of bargaining, which is whether bargaining is mandatory, permitted, or prohibited, what areas that can be bargained, state policies, which is the degree of alignment between teacher employment rules and other policies with traditional union interest, and the last bucket was perceived influence, which was basically the results of an original survey of key stakeholders in each state, basically asking them how influential they thought unions were. 37 indicators we looked at across these five areas. We ranked state-level teacher unions in each state and D.C., 51 total, as compared to one another. All right, strongest unions. You guys know this already, but Hawaii, Mike has got to stop doing that. Sorry, Darth Vader is giving me the stare down. Hawaii, Oregon, Montana, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, California, New Jersey, the weakest, Virginia, Arkansas, South Carolina, Florida and Arizona. A few other findings, 32 states require local boards to bargain collectively, 23 take fees from their non-members. We can talk about some other things in the banter. Finally, a growing number of legislatures were enacting policies in 2011 that were less in line with union priorities 3 years prior. So we have reason to believe there's some waning of union influence, at least at the state level.
It's a great study. It's complicated because the topic is complicated. It had a few surprises in it. The waning influence was of course, heartening to some of us, or the signs of waning. I also learned something brand new from this study, which is the proper definition of a right-to-work state. Mm-hmm. I used to think it was a state that forbade collective bargaining by teacher unions, and it turns out there's only five of those. Mm-hmm. But the definition of right to work is that the state does not allow agency fees to be collected from non-member teachers. And that's how many states?
That is 23.
23 right to work states.
Mm-hmm. Prohibit those.
A lot of people will be surprised by that number.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And some of them say, okay, you can collect them, but you can't use it for political purposes. So that's another little sub wrinkle in the wrinkle.
Right, which is, gets a little confusing. So when sometimes people talk about paycheck protection, sometimes they are talking about agency fees. Sometimes it might be just be things that are used for campaign contributions.
That's right.
And you can argue, there's different arguments on those different sides. I think there's a clear argument that people, teachers should not be forced to subsidize political campaigns with which they disagree. And I think mm-hmm. the Supreme Court is going to likely find that to be the case as well. All right. Now, Amber, a big debate within Fordham here about whether or not we can take these results and run them against student achievement results to look
and
at
I
that
wonder who's on which side here in this internal argument.
Yes. All right. So Amber's made the case that that's not fair. And this is the big question, right, is whether or not strong unions impede student achievement growth or possibly of whether they help the cause of raising student achievement.
Right.
There's been some studies before that have used proxies for teacher union mm-hmm. strength, like just the percentage of unionized teachers, that show actually it's related positively to student achievement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we look at this, you tell me, why can't we just take our rankings here and compare it to progress on NAEP and see what the relationship
yeah,
is?
Yeah, so a few things. I mean, one is that we actually used as an input state policies, right, which is usually your outcome variable, right? You kind of say, okay, what impact do these other indicators have on state policies? So, and we use state policies as part of the metric, so we
as
can't use it as an
right.
input.
So
right.
as an indicator of union strength was whether or not they've been able to get their policy agenda
right.
in place.
Right. And it's a snapshot, which we say several times, and further, these policies, even if we were able to use them as the outcome variables, they're in flux. They're all over the map. I mean, mm-hmm. how many times do we have to go back and tweak the state profile because of a state law being, mm-hmm. Being implemented? So you've got sort of a snapshot in time with this report, and you've got a snapshot in time with NAEP data.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of times those snapshots don't line up. And then you've got to have a theory of action. We know, like, a lot of these indicators we looked at were money and resources. And mm-hmm. we say all the time, money doesn't matter to student achievement. That was our whole area, mm-hmm. bucket one. So what's your theory of action that these things that we looked at right. in particular are going to impact student achievement?
Now, my theory of action is that some of these things would impede student achievement, because it makes it harder for schools to organize in rational ways. And I will just point out that there's four states that have made huge progress on NAEP, and this came out of a Education Next article by Paul Peterson and Eric Hanushek. They were Florida, Delaware, Maryland, and Massachusetts, and those states all rank either in the middle, kind of in 19th, 20th, 1st, 23rd, or in Florida's case, they rank 50th. Mm-hmm. So in other words, it is hard to find states that have both made a lot of progress on the NAEP and that have very strong teacher unions.
Yeah. But I mean,
but we can't prove anything about that.
We can't prove anything. Right. It's not a causal study. It's a descriptive study. But still, we know a lot of other things matter too, you know, because then we have this weird thing where we've got strong unions that have policies that aren't aligned to their own interests.
Yeah. I wasn't surprised by the lack of a relationship here. I mean, if student achievement is the product of, let's say, 100 factors, I think that teacher unions bear on maybe 15 of the factors that, that determine student achievement. They certainly get in the way of teacher unions, certainly get in the way of education reforms that we hope will improve student achievement over time. Mm-hmm. But I think we have to be candid that most of those reforms that the teacher unions get in the way of have not yet proven themselves in terms of boosting student achievement. Charter schools, for example, we know that teacher unions get in the way of having more charter schools. But are charter schools good for student achievement? It depends on which state you look at and which schools you look at.
Well, as Jeb Bush goes around the country promoting the Florida model for school reform, I hope he'll make it clear that part of that model is politically weak teacher unions.
Yeah, and that his state doesn't allow the fees from those non-member teachers.
Mm-hmm. So on the other hand, they mandate collective bargaining.
They mandate it, but it doesn't have very big teeth, you know, because you can't get those revenues that you can in other states.
Jeb Bush had the huge advantage of a voting majority in both houses of his legislature on almost everything he proposed to do.
Right. Which matters as well as teacher unions. So anyway, we just want to be, you know, just clear about what we did and were not able to do.
Very well. Okay. That is all the time we have for this week for this show. Until next week.
I'm Checker Finn.
And I'm Mike Petrilli, also known as Darth Vader of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.